There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Heredity Podcast with me, Dr. James Bergen. Today we're bringing you episode 3 of our deep dive into the people behind the journal, our Heredity editors. Now last time we heard from Dr. Mark Sift, an evolutionary geneticist at the University of Konstanz. That was one of several recorded live and in-person at the Heredity board meeting. And today we're bringing you another, as we meet the incredibly charismatic Professor Dario Garapapalha. Dario has spent most of his life in Brazil, where he originally trained as a forest engineer. And this fairly unique applied focus has influenced both his plant genetics research and his role as an editor. And more than most, I think his story highlights the versatility of a career in science. So, here it is.
Welcome to the Heredity Podcast. First up, could you just introduce yourself?
Sure, yes. My name is Dario Garapapalha. I am actually Italian by birth, but I live and work in Brazil. I've been living there for 45 years now, so I've done all my career there. And I'm a forest engineer by training, and I got my PhD at North Carolina State University in genetics back in 94. So my main interest and work has been with forest trees, not only planted forest trees, but also native forest trees from the tropical biomes. So those are the two areas that I've been working with, both population genetics of tropical trees, which, we have lots of species and lots of interesting questions and very few people working on those trees, actually, just because, you know, we have fewer scientists in Brazil. And on the other side is working with planted forests, more toward breeding applications using genetic and now genomic data.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
And I guess one thing that's interesting there is you kind of mentioned your entry and your background, and you do have a bit of an unusual background compared to some of our other editors. So
yeah.
How did you get into academia from essentially industry?
Yes. So I graduated back in 85 in forest engineering, but I also had an interest in science and research. And during my undergrad, I worked with isozymes and protein electrophoresis, looking actually at cassava, which the only professor that was working with genetics at the university, he worked with native cassava species. So when I graduated, then I went work for the industry. Right away, I got a job in the first plant biotechnology company in South America. And of course, in 1986, plant biotechnology was basically tissue culture. Okay, but then in 1988, we started doing RFLP work, because the company I used to work for was owned by an American company that was connected to a few universities in the US that started doing molecular markers in plants, RFLPs at the time. So we started actually doing RFLP work in 1988 in Brazil. So in 1990, I quit my job. I wanted to get a PhD, and I got a scholarship from the Brazilian government, and I went look for a place where I could actually keep working on markers in trees, because I started working in forest trees in my job. And I found a great place, which was North Carolina State, which is a mecca of forest genetics and applied forest genetics. And that's where I started working with more on an applied side of things, always trying to go for real applications of, at the time, molecular markers. Basically, we started doing rapid markers in forest trees. That was, and then, of course, when I finished, I did all my PhD working on eucalypts. And when I went back to Brazil, I got a job at Embrapa, where I've been working since then, which is the Brazilian Corporation of Agricultural Research. And since then, I've been collaborating strongly with the forest industry in planted forest, but at the same time, our mission in the lab that I run, the Plant Genetics Lab at the National Center for Genetic Resources and Biotechnology, also deals with germplasm conservation and population genetics and conservation of plants in general. But then, of course, my interest in trees, kept driving me to this area.
Definitely. And I mean, you've sort of touched upon it quite a lot, your various research threads, and it's all very tree related.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you could tell us sort of specifically what it is that your research is focusing on these days.
Sure, yes. So ever since my PhD, actually, I had as an interest, especially considering that the breeding cycles in trees are long. Even in tropical eucalypts, we're talking about 15-year long breeding cycle. Anything you can do to actually speed up this, accelerate the breeding cycles of a recurrent selection program has a great value to it. There always has been great expectation in using marker-assisted selection to speed up tree breeding, perennial breeding in general. So that was my main interest. And I would say, of course, at the beginning, we didn't really have very good molecular marker tools. To begin with. So we started developing microsatellite markers in 1996 in Brazil. And it was really interesting because we started working with rice and eucalypts in the lab because those were two major crops, I would say, that had support for this kind of work. But then soon we started also developing microsatellite markers for a number of tropical trees. In fact, I think we developed microsatellite for more than 30 species between 1996 and 1999, which was still, at the beginning of microsatellite development in plants. And so those tools allowed us to actually start doing some neat population genetics in tropical trees that had never been done. In fact, one of the first papers we published in Heredity was on the population genetics of, very famous trees in Brazil, which is Cariocar brasiliensis. It's it gives fruit, and it's a very important iconic species, keystone species in the Savana Cerrado of Brazil. And so, and then of course we moved on into other technologies, sequencing in eucalypts mainly. We had a large project where we put together 15 forest-based industries to start actually developing genomic resources for eucalypts. And then, of course, the story is long. We had lots of things going until we actually sequenced the eucalypt genome. We published in Nature in 2013. And starting in 2007, we started moving into genomic prediction, which is actually it's a breeding method that is really revolutionizing breeding in general. Not only, of course, they started in animals, basically bovine, dairy cattle. And this has actually now moved into forest trees and crops. And this is what the main interest as far as applied genomics into breeding has been so far. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. One thing you kind of can't miss there is how long you've been working on this and how much effort's been going into it.
Yeah.
And I wonder, what is it that's kept you motivated all this time? Why are you doing this work?
You see, I always talk to my students and I say, there's a time in life that you might have to decide if you're going to be a scientist or an engineer, or more of a scientist or more of an engineer. Basically, if you're more interested in solving actual problems and turning technology into use to generate wealth, let's put it this way, or if you're more interested in finding out mechanisms, understanding phenomena. And of course, trees are not model systems, okay? So I told my students, look, if you're interested in doing some basic stuff, just forget about trees, This is not the place to do it. Go to Arabidopsis, to C. elegans, Drosophila, okay? Now, if you want to stay here, you're going to have a chance to work at the interface between genomics, population genetics, but also breeding. And you might have a bit of a wider spectrum that will allow you to have a wider spectrum of opportunities of jobs. In fact, most of the students that came through my lab and has been quite a few, most of them either work for Embrapa, some for universities, but a good number of people actually work in industry. And so I think this has been very rewarding to me because I see people actually making differences. Okay, so this actually was what has driven me in many ways. You know, just trying to train people to understand the basics of genetics, molecular genetics, but also having this view of applying the knowledge and the technology to solve problems. Okay, so that's, you know, so I probably am more of an engineer with a scientific interest than a scientist with an engineering interest. Okay?
But that is a really interesting mix. Like it must lead to some really interesting research. Yeah.
And this, of course, also has to do with the fact that Brazil, as a country, we still need a lot of people getting into solving problems. Okay, in agriculture, is of course, it's a big thing in Brazil, and so there are lots of jobs for young people in this area. And so this also has been something that has driven me. I mean, it's always very good to see people coming out of your lab and getting jobs and making a difference. Okay, so this is really a very important thing to me.
No, perfect.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And I guess it would be kind of nice to move on to another aspect of what you do, which is being an editor here at Heredity.
Sure.
So, I mean, you've published your own work here. I mean, I think you're a fairly new editor.
Yeah.
So I wonder what it is you like about Heredity and why you decided to join the editorial team.
Sure. Yes. I work as an editor for Tree Genetics and Genomes for 12 years, I guess. And so after those 12 years, I was actually the oldest editor there. And I said to the chief editor, I said, look, I think it's time for me to move on and bring new people in. And he said, okay, sure, no problem. You know, I'll miss you, but I think it's a good idea. And then I left TGG and you know, a few months later, I got an email from Barbara. And I think Kermit Ritland had left the editorial board. And so Barbara said, you know, I think, you know, Kermit suggested your name. What do you think? I said, that would be an honor because I think Heredity is a very traditional journal. And I think tradition is important. Another thing is it's a journal that's connected to a scientific society. And I think this is important too. I'm also editor of the Journal of the Brazilian Genetic Society, which is a pretty large society. And it's a pretty good journal as well. And I think it's important to be part of something that has a long history. Okay. So especially today that you see lots of journals popping out all over the place. And I think we see important journals like Heredity that have tradition and are read. People use those as references. Okay, so I think it's really a privilege to be part of the editorial board.
Yeah, no, I liked the journal before I was involved with it as well.
And exactly.
It's nice because I've done a few of these style of interviews now, and this connection with the society is exactly. Really important to a lot of researchers, and I think it's hard to overstate
the role of that. And you know, those are journals that have been around for many, many years. And so you see like seminal papers being published, and I think heredity, genetics, so those journals that have long tradition in the area. So I think sometimes people worry too much about impact factor and understand those things, matter. But I think other things are important. And so I think heredity, for me, has been, a great opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess I'm also kind of interested in sort of the role of an editor in general. Mm-hmm. And you kind of bring a unique perspective to the journal. And I wonder what it is you are looking for in a paper when it comes to you.
Very good. It ends up, given my interest and my background and what I've done, I usually get papers related to breeding methods, use of markers into solving breeding issue, developing new methods and so on. And I think this is very important. I think this is an area of genetics. In fact, the beginning of the genetic society was actually related to animal breeding. So if you go back to the where it started from, it had to do with breeding. So I think heredity has this, this one of the purposes and missions. So when I look into this, into papers that come, I look for things that are novel, that are interesting, that are useful, that people actually see this and have new ideas on how to apply to their system. And so this is really what I look for. And of course, it has to be well-run experiments. And usually in breeding, you look at, designs and models and how people have done it, how solid it is. Also, for example, when markers are used, we look at the quality of the marker data. And sometimes, this is very important. If you want to use molecular markers in breeding, you have to use methods that you can actually replicate the data, especially if you're going to be using this across breeding generation. You have to be able, for example, in genomic prediction, you have to be able to develop prediction models that are based on marker data that you can actually regenotype and get an accuracy of 99.9% 2 or 3 years from now. So this is important. And sometimes we see some methods being used that are not really replicable. Okay. And so it's like, sometimes you see things that I call methods that are for, never to be repeated studies, like you publish and that's it. So that's important. When you think about breeding, you have to, get something done that can be repeated. Otherwise, it's not going to be useful.
You have to be able to apply it.
Exactly. The data has to be available, and heredity requires the data to be available so that people can actually check on that. I think this is really important. I look for that.
There's some good tips for people looking to publish.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess it's really obvious how passionate you are about all of this. But I wonder if there's anything sort of in your field more broadly or in research culture more generally that you're also particularly passionate about promoting.
I think, the other side of things that we've done, it's really population genetics and conservation of tropical trees. And this is an area that, we've done some work. I collaborate with some people. I've trained people that do, ex-students of mine that are professors that do a very good job in this. And I think this is very important too. But again, it's my bias. I think it's nice when you actually generate data that can actually help in devising strategies for conserving, for managing, for collecting germplasm, for ex situ conservation. I have this applied bias. I don't, especially because funding in Brazil, it's limited. Okay, so we only have so much funding and we have many problems. So we have to try to optimize as much as possible funding we have. And because we have, huge forest, Brazil has 850 million hectares of land. 550 million hectares are untouched forest. Okay. And sometimes people don't realize that. So more than half of the country, it's basically national park. And so we have, in a single hectare of Atlantic forest or Amazon forest, you have, tens and hundreds of tree species. I'm not talking about plant species in general. So the issues that we have are much more complex sometimes than a temperate forest. And the number of species that require work and it's huge. You know? So this is, I think it's important to remember that, and especially when you live in a country that has this diversity available, opportunities for studies. So it's just amazing.
Yeah, the diversity is a bit absurd. And I guess I kind of like it when you were talking there a bit about making sure that there's like the applied function, because I feel that's very much an engineering mindset as well.
Very much. Like, yeah.
Looking for the sort of positive change in everything that you
do. Exactly. Yeah. Again, I mean, resources will always be limited. Okay. And so if they are scarce, we have to optimize them. And so at the end of the day, you have to work within the reality of what's available, you know. So I think it's important.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us and sharing your work and your passions and your joy of heredity.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Jason, for the opportunity and anytime.
Perfect.
Hopefully you're feeling inspired by Dario to submit your papers to Heredity. You can find out how to do that on our website. That's nature.com/HDY. And I know we're running a bit long, but let's quickly check in with Kat Arney over at Genetics Unzipped.
The human evolutionary family tree isn't a straightforward linear progression from ancient ape to modern human, but a complex, tangled web of interrelated and interbreeding species. People don't stay in one place, and they aren't always picky when it comes to picking a mate. Add up the effects over thousands and thousands of years, and it's easy to see why trying to understand and compare the genetics of modern populations in different parts of the world is a challenging task. The truth is that the more we study human populations on a genomic level, the more diversity we find. But as we discover from Adam Rutherford, author of the new book, How to Argue with a Racist, we should be on guard against those who would wish to crudely slice this rich and complex tapestry of global human genetics for political ends. We also go hunting for ghosts in the human genome and recreate the discovery of the DNA double helix in Lego. Genetics Unzip is brought to you by the Genetics Society. Listen and download now from geneticsunzip.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I can't lie, I audibly gasped when I heard that Adam Rutherford was going to be on Kat's podcast. Please do go and give it a listen. But for us, that's it. Please subscribe to the Heredity Podcast on the platform of your choice. And give us a follow on Twitter, at Heredity Journal. If you want to get in touch with me directly, drop me an email at hereditypodcast.gen@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm James Bergen. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.